Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. The journey of a founder is unlike any other. The chips are seemingly stacked against you as an entrepreneur, but the burning desire to revolutionize the world and leave a lasting impact is stronger now than ever with many founders. Our podcast looks to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to pursue their next great idea, educate them on how to make this impossibility a reality, and create a supportive group of entrepreneurs who are there for their fellow founders. Our podcast features only the highest performing entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped, raised funds, built companies, sold companies, and have experienced life-altering challenges and some significant triumphs. Join us on this journey with the Founders Odyssey podcast and listen in on this upcoming episode. Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we create an environment for founders to thrive through education, inspiration, and a supportive community. My name is Nathan Bird, and I will be your host today. Our special guest today is founder of the Empathetic Sailing Solutions and host of the Thinking Project podcast, Dalton Jensen. Dalton's relational approach and service-first attitude has brought him to where he is today, impacting companies by helping them understand the sales process and creating successful plans for a long-term growth strategy. Join us today as we learn more about Dalton. Welcome to the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome to be here, boss.
Yeah, it's a blessing to get to know you a little bit better. I know I was just on your podcast not too long ago, so I appreciate our conversation. And this is even better because, you know, we can have another conversation within the next week and a half.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm excited to be here. It's really awesome to be here.
Yeah. For everybody out there, Dalton runs a great podcast, The Thinking Project. And, you know, he's invested a lot of time, effort, and money to create this environment for people to learn more about other stories. And I do believe that's what we're here on this earth to do, is to help draw out knowledge and wisdom in the form of story. And absolutely, today we have the blessing, like I said, to hear more about Dalton. So Dalton, tell us, what is entrepreneurship mean to you?
That's a great question. I think, and I've talked about this a lot on my podcast, but I think entrepreneurship, the definition can be different for everybody. I think we're moving away from the whole, drop out of college, 800 hours a week, sleep in your loft or whatever. And while that's sometimes what's necessary to do what you want to do. And there's definitely different avenues for everybody to explore entrepreneurship. So for me, entrepreneurship has always been, like my side hustles and my trainings and my supplemental companies that help with, you know, business owners, right? So like I own a business that essentially helps other businesses, right? So and in an industry, by the way, that's been around for a really long time. So entrepreneurship for me doesn't really have to be, you know, forging new paths or carving out new ways, because there's a lot of really great opportunities right in front of our faces that we can take advantage of with tools that we already have in our tool belt, right? And that was kind of the thing behind my podcast, which was like finding creative ways to like make money and fulfill that entrepreneurial dream that people have, and not having to do anything like really extreme, because I think entrepreneurship is a spectrum and we can get caught up on both ends, you know?
That's a really good insight. You know, I've had a similar individuals on the podcast before where they've taken a different approach to how they've created their companies. They maybe have taken a little bit longer approach, of course, but what is the length of time, right, when you still are meeting your goals? And I think that's a conversation we can have as well, right? As far as some people have a certain amount of time that they get to wherever they want to go, others take a little bit longer. And I think that it's okay with just at least setting a plan and going towards that plan. And then also for you, like you said, you see the opportunities that are just right in front of you. I want to touch a little bit more on really just taking that one inch approach. Share with us how taking a one inch approach has been good for you and in your life.
Yeah. Well, you know, the idea is starting to like explore your entrepreneurial journeys and like ventures with the skills that you already have. So for example, Empathetic Selling Solutions came about because I was already doing a lot of sales training from the company that I was working with at the time. And I realized that, you know, sales is a pretty transient profession, right? So people come and go and they end up at different places. And so with all of that happening in the sales world, you know, I would get past coworkers who would say like, hey, I loved your training. Will you come do it for this new company that I'm at? And I'd be like, yep, absolutely. And so then it kind of just snowballed, right? And then, and I think those are the coolest like entrepreneur stories that I've ever heard are the ones where they're like, you know, there's two sides, right? There's the ones who deliberately made it happen. They like set out a goal and made it happen. And then there's the other half of the camp, which is like, this actually just fell in my lap and I knew that I needed to do something with it. So I took advantage of it. Right. And I'm in that camp where it's like a lot of my businesses and my journeys have come to me with like, hey, this is just here. Like, let's take advantage of it. I've never had a lot of success with the businesses that I've tried to like, and this was just my personal experience, because you certainly can, right? But every time I've tried to force like a business idea, it didn't work. Every time I've taken what's been given to me, like life throws at me, it always works out. So that's kind of how I feel about it, right? So like people, you know, we come up with these big plans, we come up with these big ideas, and it feels like a mile that we gotta hike. So the one inch approach is just like, look at your resources, look at what you have right now, and then start going from there, networking and start building off of what you have.
That is an imperative understanding of how to build. And I know that, you know, many founders out there, there's a spectrum that we talk to, but at the end of the day, those founders are just looking for solutions. You know, they're looking for problems and they're looking for the solution to that problem. And just like what you've alluded to, it's just a one-step approach. And allowing yourself to build momentum. Momentum is a huge thing in entrepreneurship as well as within life. And mm-hmm. if you know that you are accomplishing specific set tasks right in front of you because you're open to that, and keep in mind, you could be open to obviously success, but you sometimes may not be open to doing what it's going to take to get that. Because yeah. you're so focused on the future. That happens with visionaries and it happens with entrepreneurs sometimes. Because have you ever experienced that where you may have overlooked what's currently in front of you?
Absolutely. I think we all do that, right? Like, I think it happens quite a bit and a lot more often than what people would be willing to admit, I'm sure. Because in my experience, like that's essentially what that story was, right? Was like, I overlooked, some things that were right in front of me trying to do something that I thought society would define as entrepreneurial. Right. So, and that's just not the case. Like, I'm a huge fan of boring businesses. Right. And I think that term is coming a little more, but like, I've met people who just make tons of money, live the life they want to live, and they're super happy doing really boring stuff like laundromats. Or I met a gentleman one time who sold a chicken coop like sets to people, and he was really young, and it was just like who would have ever thought of that, right? Like doing something like that. But these things that we just overlook because we have this different idea of what entrepreneurship is, right? We have this flashy definition of entrepreneurship, and to be really frank, like that's not the only one, you know what I mean? And so like this kind of hustle culture that we've gotten into of like, it has to be fancy. It has to be, you know what I mean? We have to be like groundbreaking, and that's just not the case. Right. And then to take that one step further, you know, I don't know if we mentioned this when you and I talked on my podcast, but my experience has always been like, if the market, if there's no market, right, if there's no competition in the area that you want to, you know, dive into, that can be a red flag just as much as it can be a green flag. You know what I mean? Like, trying to blaze a new path might not be the best way, especially if you're going to start. Like, I specialize in like helping people start. So that Empathetic Selling Solutions is about helping new entrepreneurs start, right? Because I feel like that's the hardest part. And so I've been able to do some really amazing things with that company on the basis of like, I just help people start. So, and that's what I tell people. I'm like, don't overlook what you already have.
I'm going to get to that here in a moment within the podcast. And I believe that that is a really good intro into that here a little bit later. Tell us a little bit about your interest in business and when did it all begin?
Yeah, my interest in business started with selling. So like I was actually, funny story. So I was at a time in my life where I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Didn't know if I was going to go to college. I didn't know if I was going to whatever. And I was working for a city water company. So I was working for the city in my hometown at the time at a water company. I was actually here in Utah. And I remember driving past the Honda dealership one time. And I was like, hey, because like, I always go kind of go back to my roots, and it's really funny how it all works. But anyway, I had driven past the Honda dealership and I had met a car salesman who was really successful. And by the way, that's the other thing, is like all sales and all business, like we get this idea of like what business should look like. And sometimes that looks like investment banking or like guys with, you know what I mean? Or like, and it's just like making money doesn't have to look like that. Right. So anyway, I was driving past the Honda dealership. Something in my head reminded me of like, hey, you know, you grew up, everybody told you that you could be a good salesman. You should try that. So I went in, I got a job selling cars. And that's when I realized though, that like, cause Honda is like one of the more expensive consumer brands, right? It's not luxury, but it's not like, you know, buying another car that's really cheap, right? Honda's pretty expensive. And so I would see like these people come into the dealership who made a lot of money, and we would take credit apps. And so I would ask people like, all right, where do you work? And they would tell me, and then they would tell me how much money they made. And I was like, dang, I am in the wrong business. But I'm grateful for that sales job. I'm grateful for sales because it's the foundation of all business, right? But I just, that's when I was working like, and then I would sell like Mercedes Benz, and these guys would make tons of money. Guys and girls would make tons of money. And so that was it. I was like, all right, I'm in. So that's what really took it off for me, was seeing what other people were doing and how you can make it happen.
Yeah. Well, you had to take the leap of faith there though, and shake it up a little bit. And I feel like some people in our life, they don't take that next step. And like you said, it's the hardest to just get started. What was something that prompted you to make a change? I know, just you said maybe you were unsatisfied, but what was the initial thing that helped you get over that? Maybe, the hump of like actually making a change.
Yeah. Well, I think philosophically it was the idea that like, you're gonna like you in life, you're gonna lose. And what I learned was that if I was gonna lose, I'd rather it be on my own terms than someone else's terms. So you know what I'm saying? And that's how I think, right? Like I'm pretty stoic in my philosophy, in the sense that like, who said that like failure isn't fatal, success isn't forever kind of thing. You just got to keep going. And so that's what kind of was what it was for me. And like the pandemic, so a lot of this business started in the pandemic in 2020, late 2019, early 2020. And that's when we found out that like nobody was safe. Like people who'd been at jobs for 40 years working for the gold watch in retirement, like companies just came in, chopped their head off, right? Like figuratively speaking, but like, you know what I mean? They just got let go. Like nobody was safe. Didn't matter if you worked at the company for a day or 40 years. And it didn't matter if you were working for the government or if you were working for a startup, like everybody was on the chopping block and nobody was safe. And so if that was the case, then I would rather go out knowing that And if I was going to go out, I'd rather go out knowing that it was on my terms and not because I was like, you know, some casualty. Right.
That's so good.
Yeah. And so, I mean, ended up working out very well, but I kind of come from the, I approach situations with like worst case scenario, and it's very liberating for me. Cause I go, what's the worst case scenario? I'm probably not going to die. I'm probably not going to lose my house. So like, why not? Let's try it. You know?
I love that. Hey man, every team needs somebody like you. You're the worst case scenario guy.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, so if the worst case is we lose all of our money, well, can we afford to lose it? And if the answer is yes, and we want to do it well enough, well, then let's roll, man.
Yeah, I love it. Let's go. You know, well, that's interesting. So you're selling cars, you see other people doing what they're doing. I'm sure a lot of business owners came in there and that sparked your interest to get into the next, you know, the next season of your life, which was helping other people understand sales and helping other people build these relationships on empathy. I think that's a big topic that you like to bring up. And let's go through, because I brought you on to really share with the audience some super like dojo, you know, ninja sales techniques. And I believe that you would be able to share with us some of those insights as to what you do within your company, but also how you've helped other companies. I mean, currently your company Empathetic Solutions has been hired out to help with one of the fastest growing franchises in the entire nation. And I'll let you explain a little bit about that here in just a second. So share with us how things are going right now and how you're building.
Yeah, we're doing great, man. I mean, I'm a part of Dirty Dough. And that's the other thing about entrepreneurship. Like people are like, oh, you got to start your own company, be your own company. But it's like, I had a great opportunity to take what I've already learned in a business that I had already started, you know, and a platform that I had to go join a really awesome company who's doing amazing things and help them build out a sales team and build out a process. And I have some really awesome people on the team too. So like Bennett and another guy, Justin, I'm working with, and Chalice, and all these guys are like really, really special people. And so I'm definitely not doing it alone, but that's the idea of like empathy, right? Like is connecting with others and realizing that everybody's got a strength and you can move forward. And so, yeah, so that company and platform was a big reason why I am where I am now. And that company still exists. Like I still help train people. I still help work with companies. And so it's a blessing to be in that position. And yeah, but as far as like, ninja sales techniques, I think I could spend forever on that, man, but
let's do it. We're here.
Yeah. I think so to be honest with you, one of my hot takes in sales is, philosophy over psychology. And here's the reason why. Like, because first of all, like the psychology, so you get into all the psychology, all right, like NLP or body language or tone and all that stuff. And all that stuff's really important. You know, you go to some sales trainings and they're like, change your tone and ask, how do you ask questions and all this psychological stuff. But for me, the psychology of sales is really simple. It's empathy. It's, can you connect with somebody and do you actually care? So the basis for that claim comes from a Harvard psychologist named Amy Cuddy. Her and her team did a study where they interviewed people and they observed people about how we judge others immediately. So we judge others off of two criteria, warmth and competence. In other words, we're trying to answer two questions when we meet each other. Do they know enough and do they care enough to help me? Right. So, and we actually judge warmth a little more than competence. So we can put up with a little bit of like, that's why in sales, like the magic words are like, if you don't know the answer to a question, the magic words are, I don't know. Right. Because that shows warmth. And so we can put up with a little bit of, I don't know if they do care and they are trying to help. So that's kind of the philosophy behind, the psychology of sales, right? So like the psychology is all empathetic. And then the philosophy of sales, right, is because sales is like really hard. Sales and business are really hard. And we've all heard it before that like, it's not about what you know, because we've all seen really talented people give up on a really good idea. We're just like, bro, you were right there. Or like, you know what I mean? You were so close. And so what's the difference? Well, the difference is like how we approach the situations that we're in. And like a lot of people call it mindset. A lot of people call it attitude. I try to stay away from those words just because of like the toxic positivity culture that we've kind of gone into, right? Like I'm more of a realist, right? Like I think that there is, you know, I think that there is power in just acknowledging and accepting whatever situation that you're in. So I try to live by like two sayings in business. First that like peace is about acceptance, not control. And the second one is, and I just blanked, but I'll think of it, but like acceptance, not control. Right. And then when you move forward, you're just, it's all about making the decision and having habits in place that help you. So this is with sales or with business, right? Because there's going to be ebbs and flows. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be, things that come up that are just really hard to deal with. And so it's the difference between, and this is the second thing, I just remembered it, but it's the difference between being content and being complacent, right? It's like how you push, right? So complacency is knowing that there's a problem and being so oblivious to it that you don't want to know there's a problem and you don't want to fix it. And so eventually the problem becomes too big that it crumbles everything around it, right? And then there's, so that's complacency. And then there's content. And content is knowing that there's a problem, being willing to resolve the problem, but also knowing that there's happiness and peace along the path that you're on in the current moment that you're in. You know what I'm saying? So like complacency kills, but being content pushes you forward, right? Through all the bad times, through all the hard times, because like it just happens, right? There's a lot of gurus out there. I call them fake gurus, but there's, you know, a lot of these fake gurus out there who tell you like, you know, always be happy and your attitude, or like that eventually you're going to get to plateaus. And like, that just doesn't, I mean, you can even look at some of the balance sheets and some of the 10Ks for the biggest companies in the world. And they go like this, right? They go one year they have 5%, the next year they have 15%, but over 10 years, the growth rate is 7, right? But it still does this, right? So like, how do you work through those? Well, it's the philosophy behind it. It's how you approach the situations, right?
Yeah, that's a good perspective. Another perspective that I would be interested in how you deal with is how you partner with your potential customer. What does a partnership look like?
Yeah, like with clients or like even business partners. So here's the thing. Empathy is a huge part of this, right? Because the definition of empathy is sharing the thoughts and feelings of another person. And that's how we connect with people. And that's how we build trust. So here's the other thing. Like, I love relationships. I think relationship selling is key. But in some cases in business, we don't have 10 years to build a relationship with somebody that we need to work with, right? Like, sometimes I just don't get that luxury. And that's not to say it's not important, but how do you fast track a relationship? How do you build trust quickly? How do you connect quickly? And that's all through empathy. That's all through how we approach. So right now I'm kind of talking high level, but what does that look like in a real conversation, right? What does that look like in real life? So that would look like me, you know, asking a lot of questions, right? So I come from like an empathy-based, like question-based framework. So how do I connect with clients? Well, I get to know them, right? Like, the most interesting people are interested. And so I'm going to get to know you, right? Because I really can't move forward in a relationship unless we have like some commitments going forward. And I can't get to those commitments unless I'm actually learning about you, right? So like, you know, gaining clarity on why we're here, right? So like, that's a question that can get answered really quick and let you know right up front whether or not it's worth it to move forward, by the way, on both ends, right? So like, you know, if I'm approaching a customer or a new client, I might be, or a new partnership, I mean, I might be like, so what are your goals with this whole partnership? What are you looking to get out of this? What prompted you to take the meeting? Like, how can I help you? And what are you looking for? Like, those questions, it does two things. First of all, it lets you know what their intentions are, and you can kind of build on those questions. And second of all, it establishes a basis of like boundaries now. Like now we're setting up boundaries, right? So like we know why we're here. And that's probably the number one reason why people, you know, why we argue is because like we're not clear on what we're doing, right? And so how do we start that communication? That's what with questions like of clarity, questions of you know, leverage. So like I might start with like, hey, you know, I might be like, hey Nathan, you know, so tell me more about like what prompted you to look into Dirty Dough, or what prompted you to look into this company, or like, hey, you know, I reached out to you, but I'm just curious, like, you know, I reached out to you for a business partnership, but I'm just curious, Nathan, before I dive into my spiel, like, are you looking for a business relationship? And if you were, like, what does that look like for you? Right. Because like, I need to flip it and I need to get somebody else talking, because if I talk the whole time, it doesn't work.
Yeah. Getting customer buy-in is important. And continuing to develop that relationship to have somebody on your side for really what you're trying to provide them, but also helping them understand the value that you can provide to where they're internalizing that value, I do believe is important. Because if they have a wall up, because, you know, let's go this direction. What have you seen actually in sales that makes a bad sales experience for your customer to actually walk? Let's talk about that scenario, because you have created a scenario currently where you're asking questions, you're getting buy-in, and the customer's happy. Let's do a scenario where the customer is, or at least you, they may be interested, but you kind of biffed it. Like you actually messed up. And let's go through that scenario, because there are people out there that are listening that may have just messed up a sales opportunity, and how do we parachute?
Yeah. So first of all, I really believe that no one thing can mess up a deal, right? That like people's intentions on both ends can be like, we can both make it even though mistakes have been made. So that's the first thing. Like, it's not one thing that kills a deal. It's not like, I forgot to say this, I'll never get the deal again. So, but that's also the philosophy approach, right? Like, I really believe that. So to answer your question, like if somebody's messed up, like I have, right? Like totally, man. Like you skip a question, you get too excited and you jump right into something. It's the first thing is like acknowledging that you did that. Then just communicating that, right? Like in a relationship, right? Like, hey, Nathan, I got a little ahead of myself, brother. I got really excited. I need to back up just a little bit to kind of set the stage for this. And so just acknowledging that you messed up, you made a mistake, and that you're going to back up. Because the worst thing that you can do in a sales, and this is like, I guess to answer your question, like what makes like a bad sales process is just like plowing through and just like, oh, made a mistake. You know what I mean? Rather crash into a wall going 100 miles an hour than stop, right? It's like, no, dude, just stop.
I like what you said there just for a second. I've even experienced scenarios where I'll straight up tell the person what they're about to receive, right? And why I'm there. I'm like, I'm here to sell you on an opportunity. And it's not always like that. And I'm not saying like for everyone to start with this type of approach, but there's a lot of different approaches to setting a stage as you've experienced, right? So like today we're going to be discussing an investment. This is a great investment, and you might actually be really interested in, actually, you might actually want to invest today with what we have, but it may not, it also may not be for you actually. So let's go through the scenario here. There's psychology there too, where you're pulling it away. But then you're providing. Anyway, I don't want to get too far into that, but just stating what you're about to accomplish in a call with them to set it straight, you know?
Yes. Absolutely. And Sandler would call that, the Sandler training would call that an upfront contract. So at the beginning of the call, you're just going to be like, hey, Nathan, you know, today we're going to discuss X, Y, and Z. This is how I'm going to answer some questions for you. And then at the end of the call, you know, we'll decide if you want to move forward, yes or no. But before we get to that, let me jump, you know what I mean? And just, but yeah, but that's part of empathy. Like, that's why I'm telling people, like, this is a psychology, like the psychology of sales is empathy, because it's like, you can call that a trick or a tactic or whatever you want to call it, but I just call it being a being and actually giving a shit about someone other than yourself, like telling people what's going on. Cause like the number one reason a customer doesn't buy from you is confusion. Most of the time, like they're confused, right? They're confused on the price. They're confused on what your product does. They're confused on the timeline. They're confused on next steps. And like, nobody wants to admit that they're confused. And so they'll just ghost you. And I'm not saying that's 100% of the time, right? There might be other things that happen. Like, they might be, you know, they might not actually have the budget. They might not have all these other things, but I'm generally speaking, that they're confused, and that's something that you can control, right?
Let's talk about objections. How people
perceive the process. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about objections. So
yeah.
I just walked in your store, or I just walked in your Zoom meeting, and then I ended up saying, well, hey, I'll be back. We've all heard of the feedback, right?
So
let's enter into a scenario. I know we're just role playing. I swear we could probably role play for like hour here, but
you're good.
I just came in, I'm interested, but then I end up leaving saying I'll be back. What do you do?
Yeah, so here's my I'll give you the 5-minute objections masterclass right now. And that is like closing isn't a step in the process, and handling objections, like for that one. So if somebody walks into, like, somebody calls me on the phone and they're like, hey, I want to talk about empathetic selling, but real quick, I got to call you back. My answer is like, okay, cool. Call me back. Because like, that one's just like, so like, okay, cool. But my point with objections and closing is this, is like, closing isn't a step. Closing is a whole process. Master closers start closing at the beginning of the deal. Like, hard closing doesn't work. So like, you'll hear a bunch of those, like, and by the way, listen, I'm guilty of it. I bought all the closing books. I have the Closer Survival Guide up there. I got the 10 Secrets to Closing. Like, I got them. But here's what I learned, is like, those closes are very like disingenuous. They're, yes, they're just so like, but I can do them. Look, I can do all the hard closes. Like, I'll be back. Are you sure? You'll be back. When do you think you'll be back? 2 minutes, you know, a week, 2 weeks, 2 months. And then you'll say a week. And I'll say, okay, well, cool. Well, what's the difference between you moving forward right now versus a week? Like, oh, the difference is money. Okay. Well, what if I can get you financing? Right. Like, I can do all of that. Right. But it's just like, nobody wants to be in that situation. I don't like being in that situation. You know what I mean? So, well, so handle it. Go ahead.
Hold that real quick. There that is important to note here, is if you have to persuade somebody to buy, then you have to persuade them to stay.
Yeah.
So I think that's extremely important to understand. Like, if I needed to use persuasive techniques and a hard close at the end to get you to buy in, then we've got a problem, because I've got to do the same thing to keep you.
Yeah, exactly. And so, no, that's a great point, because like, you know, in that situation, so this is what I tell salespeople. You need to handle all the objections up front. That's why I'm going to ask really weird questions. Like, some of my questions might be counterintuitive. Like, one of the questions I like to ask is like, who else are you looking at? So if somebody was coming up to me for sales training, I'd be like, cool, who else are you looking at for sales training? Oh, you're looking at Jeb Blunt or something like that. Oh, great. They're great. Cool. And then, but like, I know, like, and now I need to craft my pitch, because where there is no difference, there can be no preference. And so I'm going to handle that objection up front. Like, we're going to talk about that early. So if somebody came, like, this happens all the time, right? Like, hey, I don't have a lot of time. I go, cool, me either. Real quick, let's start. You know what I mean? So I just always say something that they're not expecting. Cool, I don't have a lot of time either. So let's just cut right to the chase then. And then I'll start qualifying. Then I'll start asking my questions. Because like, it's a different close, right? Like, so if they say like, I don't have enough time, I got to go, I'll be like, cool, that's fine. I don't have a lot of time either, but let me ask you a few questions so that I make sure I know how to help you. 1, 2, 3, right? And then if they say that again, right, and I'm going to gather information. Anyway, I'm going to gather information. And then at the end, if they still say that, right, I'm going to have all of that information that I've leveraged, right? And I'm going to know how to handle that based on what they've told me.
So good. We've got a person, though, that they're walking. let's go back to the BBAC situation and how do we keep that person there? Well, I guess you did answer it. It's pretty much you are closing from the beginning. You're not needing to hard close.
But I don't need to do anything.
There are specific ways to, like, say, for example, like I said, somebody says, well, I'll be back. What in your sales process did you forget to do?
And that's actually a really good point that I kind of overlooked. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because objections at the end like this, you always miss the step. So if somebody was like, so if we get to the end and somebody's like, I'll be back, or I'll call you back later, or let me think about it, I'll call you back, then I missed the urgency. I missed building some urgency there. And how do you build authentic urgency? You ask the right questions about their, you ask like leading questions about their situation. So for example, if somebody was like looking at sales training and they're like, all right, well, you gave me a lot to think about. Let me call you in a week. Let me talk with my team. Let me call you in a week and I'll give you an answer, right? Like that's a pretty standard one, right? I didn't build enough urgency in the fact that they actually need sales training now rather than later, right? And so maybe I can ask like, okay, hey, Nathan, that's totally fine. I understand. Got to go back to your team. Let me ask you this, Nathan. What is your team looking for in a sales process? And what do you need to tell them in order for them to make a decision right away? Right. That's just another question, but I'm getting more clarity, right? So if he says something like, yeah, we actually need somebody right now who can come in 9 to 5, hard reset my sales team. You know what I mean? But he'll give me the answers. And so when I circle back and I say, well, all right, let's do this. And then he goes, well, let me talk to my team. Then I can, instead of using a hard close, like, well, sounds like you're going to do it sooner rather than later, so why don't we just sign up right now? Like, instead of saying something like that, you know, you could say something like, well, hey, great. Let's talk to your team then. I'd love to be part of that meeting. I'd love to go over what I went over with you, because you're not a sales guy and you don't have time for that. I'd love to help you out with that. You have Monday at 5. When is your team meeting? Monday at 5? Cool. I'll be there. That's a great one. And by the way, he's going to need buy-in either. In that scenario, they're going to need buy-in from their team anyway. So you might as well just schedule it. Like, we also get caught up in one call closes, or like these hard closes, and like, yeah, I closed them on the phone, no help. It's like, no, man, just why don't you just take your time? Because you're going to get the money anyway.
Yeah. But that's important. I do believe it's super important for founders. And because look, every founder out there is pitching something. We're all selling something. Obviously, as you know, I'm such a proponent and promoting not only for myself, but also for everybody that's a part of my sphere. So that's why I'm like, everybody think project, or thinking project, go check it out today. Dalton has got it going on. But thanks, no, but what do you do? It's follow-up. Tell us a little bit about
follow-up
and how people are completely dropping the ball. Because as we know, fortune is in the follow-up, and the sales process, right, is also the follow-up process. So touch on the follow-up.
Yeah, actually, this is my favorite thing to talk about. Why don't salespeople follow up? Because they're scared to follow up. Why are salespeople scared? Because they don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. And they're afraid of interrupting. By the way, all of those are valid. One of my favorite sayings in life is, I have a lot of favorite sayings, but one of my other favorite ones is excuses suck so bad because they're real. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's got an excuse, and the reason they suck so bad is because they're actually legitimate. Like, you don't know what to say. You are scared of interrupting. So how do we curb all of that? You just tell the customer that you're going to follow up. Hey, Nathan, great talking to you today. Totally understand you got to go talk to your team. And I understand that if you don't want me to be at your sales team, that might come off a little pushy. I totally get it. But I'm going to call you Monday after your sales meeting, and we're going to go over it. I'm not interrupting at that point. And if they say, no, don't worry about it, or something like that, and I would go, gosh, you know, follow-up is pretty typical in our business. You know, I definitely want to make sure that you're being taken care of. What's making you pause for the follow-up? And then I can ask more questions though, right? Like, I can, like, every objection should come back to like a qualification question.
Yeah.
So the first thing is like, I just tell people that I'm going to follow up. I'm going to follow up with you on Monday. And this is what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, hey, there's another scenario. Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's do it.
And this scenario is, can you please provide me with some more information?
Yeah, absolutely. Can you
please provide me with some more information? Send me an email, absolutely. Send me a marketing material, send me your pitch deck. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely, Nathan. Real quick, when I send over that information via email and I send over that pitch deck, what information are you looking forward to seeing the most? What information is going to help you the most to make a decision? That's what I would say. And then I am going to send them information. By the way, I think you should absolutely do everything that you say you're going to do in a sales pitch.
Yes.
And I send that to them because what happens right now, we're like, if we're in this role play and someone says, send me some information, I'd be like, cool, sounds good. I will totally send that over. What information needs to be in that email for you to feel like you've made an educated decision? They're going to say, oh, well, I need to see your price. I need to see all of this. And then now we have a whole nother conversation that just opened up. That allows me to ask leading questions, get more information, because the only thing that can kill you in a deal is the stuff you don't know about.
So good. How about that customer though, that you just sent that information to, they reviewed it. Yeah. And then there's this awkward silence, right? Where it's like,
they said
they would get back to me, but then now I don't want to be buggy. And then how do I reach out, you know, and what do I say? Yeah. Re-engage the conversation. Cause I know a lot of people out there, I've been through that where you send somebody something and then they reviewed it. Then you're like, hey, did you review the information? And then they're like, crickets.
And then they just ghost you. Yeah.
Okay. So what do you do?
So there's two ways to answer that question. The first one is with a story. And this is what changed my whole mind about follow-up. I had a manager. And by the way, I'm going to tell you up front, I don't know anything about basketball, but when she told me the story, it just made sense. Cause I do like sports and I know enough about basketball to understand the story. Right. And so essentially the story went like this. They were playing basketball. There was the score was close and they needed to stop the clock and they needed a chance to get the ball back. So that meant that somebody had to like foul another player, right? Sometimes that happens, right? Sometimes in the psychology of the basketball game. And like I said, this is a total generalization. So don't make fun of me for not knowing basketball, but essentially what happened was they were like, look, you need to foul. If you foul them at this spot, it'll stop the clock. They'll have to pass the ball instead of getting a shot, right? They'll pass the ball in and that'll give us a chance to intercept it. And they told, and my manager at the time was like, and that was me, I had to foul. But if I fouled, I was going to foul out. Like I was going to be out of the game. Right. So she's like, all right, I'm going to do it. You can't be scared to foul out. So she fouled out. They intercepted the pass. They scored and they won. Right. And so the whole moral of the story is you can't be afraid to foul out. Like the best salespeople I know don't have 5-star reviews on Google.
That's good.
Okay. That's go okay
for it, right? It's like I'm a basketball nut, right? So played college basketball and it was all about but this was a you miss 100% shots you don't take, right? And like Michael Jordan was like everything to me and everything, but anyway, I totally get it, and that's a really good illustration for everybody out there. Man, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. So what are you excited about moving forward? And, what are you excited about?
Yeah, man. You know what I'm really excited about? I'm just excited about life, dude. There's a lot of things happening. And I don't believe that. I believe in life that you should take advantage of opportunities. Like, I don't really have 5 or 10 year goals for my life, but I want to be ready for an opportunity when it presents itself. Like, that's what I like, you know what I mean? So what are my 5-year goals or 10-year goals for life? What do I get most excited about? I live my life to try to be ready for opportunities that like sick opportunities that present themselves that I want to be a part of. And so that's how I live my life. I live my life in the present moment, knowing that I'm prepared to take any opportunity that comes my way because I've prepared myself to do that. And, so I'm just excited for the future, man. I know that's so cheesy, but I gave you a little bit of insight as to why, because life is about opportunities. Like, well, we're past the days of working at a company for 40 years and getting the gold watch. And now it's pretty common for people to go from company to company every 2 to 5 years. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm like, dude, we're on this earth for a really short period of time, and we should take every opportunity that excites us, and we should try to be prepared for that as much as we can. Because the only thing that's helped me get to where I'm at today is that mindset that I'm going to take every opportunity that presents itself that I think is going to be worthwhile. And it's all experience and it's all a good time.
Share with us real quick the current opportunity that you're in and what you're excited about that and how that's growing. Because I know people out there would love to hear more about that, as well as how they can get a hold of you for any type of opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now I have two things. So Dirty Dough is blowing up. It's a cookie company, really like comparable to like a Crumble or a Crave or like Great American Cookie Company, something like that. And we're exploding. We're selling franchises all over the United States, selling franchises all over, you know, in every city, basically. There's some cities that we're not registered in yet, but we're working on that. But it's a great opportunity to lower that. We figured out how to lower the barrier of entry into entrepreneurship. And there's one big piece of entrepreneurship that people overlook, and that's entrepreneurship by acquisition. And so buying a company and making it better, or buying a company that knows what's going on and you can make the profits from that, is a great opportunity. And so that's Dirty Dough for me. Obviously, if you want to learn more about sales, you can reach out to me. The best way to do it is on probably LinkedIn. And my LinkedIn is Dalton K. Jensen, but you can also find me anywhere. That's my handle. I don't know. Does saying handle age me? I don't know. No, that's my social media handle everywhere. Twitter, Facebook,
that's exciting. LinkedIn,
Instagram.
So I love cookies. That's for sure. And Dirty Dough has been in the news quite a bit. We're excited about the growth there. What about Anchorage, Alaska? You guys ever thought about getting up in Anchorage?
Dude, I think we're registered in Alaska. I think that'd be a sweet spot for it. Nice. Anchorage, Alaska would be dope.
Yeah. Well, I know I come up here every once in a while, right? Been up here for a few months, and we'll go back to Salt Lake here pretty soon. But regardless, thank you so much for being on the show today, Dalton. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I hope everybody out there as well has enjoyed it. Any last words of wisdom for the crowd?
No, just keep on. Just love the journey.
Love the journey. That's huge.
Love the journey. Yep.
Well, hey, once again, guys, if you like today's episode, feel free to subscribe. You can subscribe on YouTube, which is actually great. You can see our pretty faces. And in addition to that, you can check us out on Spotify and just Google search The Founders Odyssey. It's super easy. Founders Odyssey podcast. And until next time, feel free to check out some of our other episodes. We've had companies, individuals that have taken companies IPO, people that have raised millions in funding, that have sold large companies for a lot of money, but also they've learned a lot during that process, as well as we have sales ninjas, legal professionals, financial professionals, all in the Rolodex here. So thank you, Dalton, and we will talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, brother.